Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This was supposed to be a holiday week. In years past, holiday weeks would be, you know, slow, quiet, but not in the Trump era. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, some of the big issues, the census, whether or not President Trump wants to put a citizenship question on it, these border detention facilities, what should we do about them? Should they close, as some people are suggesting? Plus, the 2020 race, Kamala Harris, springboarding on the polls. We talk about all of that. We also talk about earthquakes, because this week there was a big earthquake in California, a 6.4. And so that woke a lot of people up and asking questions about where we go from here. Our guest this week on our panel, Lisa Bloom, who's been with us before, noted attorney, Sean Steele, a Republican National Committeeman, and for the first time, Dean Shermay, a chef. We'll get to them in a moment, but we begin with Congresswoman Katie Hill, who's really become a rising star. We've been profiling her since the beginning of her race. She now represents Simi Valley, Santa Clarita, Palmdale, Lancaster, Agua Dulce. She's the freshman representation to leadership. Her freshman class picked her as their representative. We began by talking about the earthquake this week. Congresswoman Katie Hill, welcome back to The Issue Is. Good to see you.
Yes,
I know you've been with us via satellite. It's nice to have you in the house.
I'm very excited to be in house.
It's more fun this way.
And when
you're in LA, you get to experience earthquakes.
Yeah, right? I know.
Which we had this week. You don't get that in DC. And that's sort of a top of mind for a lot of people. It brings up the issue of the earthquake early warning system, which is something that I know Democrats, especially from the West Coast in Congress, are trying to have happen.
Right.
Where are we at with making that happen on a federal level?
Sure. So I was part of a coalition of representatives from out here in California on a letter led by Adam Schiff asking for funding in the appropriations process to go towards this system. And we were successful in that, and we got about $25 million, including both operating, you know, continuing with the research, and also investing in the infrastructure. That passed the House on the 25th. So, you know, it was even more than we had hoped for. And now it's a matter of it going to the Senate and continuing to fight for those funding levels and making sure that it passes through the final appropriations process.
So what exactly would that money do?
So it would continue with the research. It would expand it. It would hopefully allow us to get it functioning at a higher level sooner. And, you know, it's... I think it's something that we all know how important it can be to have an alert that's just a few seconds in advance to be able to stop trains, to be able to, you know, stop traffic lights, to make sure that people, we have an actual chance to save lives.
And this is something that they already have really in Japan and Mexico, and we're hoping to get here in America,
exactly.
Or at least expand upon here in America. Another one of the big issues here in California, of course, is the issue of homelessness, which is something you know pretty well because you worked for this organization called PATH, which is a nonprofit all about homelessness. This week, President Trump talked about the issue of homelessness with Tucker Carlson on Fox News. He singled out Los Angeles and San Francisco, and what he surprisingly sees as a new problem.
But New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles, they've got a major problem with...
It's very sad.
...with filth.
Very sad.
Why is that?
It's a phenomenon that started 2 years ago. This is the liberal establishment. This is what I'm fighting. I don't know if they're afraid of votes. I don't know if they really believe that this should be taking place. You take a look at what's going on with San Francisco. It's terrible. So we're looking at it very seriously. We may intercede. We may do something to get that whole thing cleaned up. It's inappropriate.
So Governor Newsom's response to that is basically, we can use the help. Here's what he had to say.
It sounds like the President of the United States recognizes he has work to do on this issue. He is apparently committed to some intervention, which is encouraging.
What do you have to say?
Well, my first thought was like, great, please do something about it. That's what we've been asking for as long as I've been in the field. Just for context, PATH was founded in 1984. That's the organization that I worked for 30-something years ago. And I was working in it for almost 10 years. So it's clearly not a new problem. I don't know where he's been that he thinks that it just showed up within the last couple of years. But either way, would love to see them intervene in some capacity.
But his basic point that this is a problem, liberal politicians, you got some of the biggest cities that are run by liberals, and this is a failure of liberal politics. What do you say?
Well, what he clearly doesn't understand is what causes homelessness in the first place. The issue is that you have in metropolitan areas where you have high rents and low vacancy rates, that's where homelessness is the most prevalent. That also happens to be where more and more people are typically more Democratic leaning. And so I think one part in the interview that you didn't show right here, but that he says, he's like, oh yeah, we had some problems with it a few years ago when I first became president in Washington, D.C., and we got rid of it. We took care of it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I go past those encampments every day in Washington, D.C. They're not gone. So I just sometimes wonder about what kind of alternative reality he's existing in.
Another big issue, of course, is that of detention centers, which has been talked about so much. Congressman Joaquin Castro led a delegation. Mm-hmm. He's the brother of the guy running for president right now, to one of those detention centers and described some really horrible conditions. Here's what he had to say.
But there was no running water for people to drink. In fact, one of the women said that she was told by an agent to drink water out of the toilet.
You're on the House Oversight Committee, where you're going to have a hearing about this very issue next week. There have been some protesters at congressional offices all over California demanding that these camps be closed. Do you think they should be closed?
Well, I think that we do need to close them in the way that they are now, right? I think we have to think through our entire process around how we're bringing people in, or how people are coming to our country in terms of asylum seekers. And, you know, there is an inflow issue that has to be managed. But the way that we're doing it now with these camps, with people who have standing room only, who don't have access to clean water, to basic hygiene items, it's completely un-American. I also have a real problem with the fact that they're operated by for-profit companies. I think that this is exactly the kind of situation in which we should see community-based organizations, nonprofits, who are able to partner with the government to provide this function. CBP, Border Patrol, any law enforcement agency should not be in the business of trying to house or take care of children. And so we really need to look at how we're creating the mechanisms, putting them in place so that we're operating it in the way that we would any other humanitarian crisis.
You know, Julian Castro, who's running for president, Cory Booker and others have said that the solution to some of this is to decriminalize the issue of illegal immigration, essentially make illegal immigration no longer be illegal. What do you think about that? Should we decriminalize illegal immigration?
So I don't think it's that simple, right? Like, I don't think that that's exactly what they're saying. It's that by nature of walking across the border, seeking a better life, does that in and of itself make you a criminal? And if the answer is yes, then that, you know, that changes our entire perspective about how we treat you moving forward.
Do you think it is?
I don't think that that in and of itself should be criminal. I think that it's clearly not how we want people to be approaching our process of getting into the country. But I will also say that we have made the legal process so difficult, and that's something that has been completely exacerbated by the Trump administration, that there's no way that people are able to do so. I mean, they're trying to wait in line to go through the actual asylum process, and they're, you know, there's no way that they can do it. So they end up going around and hoping that they get caught by Border Patrol.
But critics would say if that's not illegal, we have open borders, and you're an advocate for that, and that we need to have borders to have a country.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I don't think that it's open borders. I think that it's a matter of it should not be allowed, but does that make you a criminal, right? And I think that there's the difference between an actual crime and, you know, a misdemeanor, or saying, like, we are going to intercept you, we're going to say that you have to go through this process. But I really think that the solution has to lie within. We have border security. We have a real process in place for taking people and accepting them and figuring out what the best approach is to handling it after the fact, once people do get here, because that's not going to stop. You know, it doesn't matter how many walls you build, people are still going to try to come into this country.
So what do you do with the people when they get here?
So I think what we need to do is that we have to, what everyone's concern is, right, when it comes to illegal immigration, is the concern around safety, right? It's around whether somebody is a dangerous person coming in, whether drugs are coming in, et cetera. And that's the number one thing that I hear is like, well, you know, we can't have all of this coming into our country, and we don't know who these people are. They could be whatever. But if we have our Border Patrol agents freed up and able to actually process people, know who they are, do the background checks, go through the process of actually figuring out where they're going to go, because people have, you know, they come here and they are able to integrate into society. I mean, that's how this entire country was founded, was on immigration. And so to do that, I think we have to we really have to rethink this entire approach. It's if you want to just keep saying no and have like this little tiny fraction of people who are allowed in, then we are not going to be able to get past this. I think and I've found support, surprisingly, from more conservative folks, including in my own district, that the best way to reduce illegal immigration is to actually expand legal immigration and allow people to do so the right way.
In some ways, this issue is tied to the next issue, which is the census and the question of whether there should be a citizenship question on the census. The president thinks that there should be. At first, government lawyers said, we're not going to ask that question, after the Supreme Court basically said, you can ask that question. Now the president says, we still want to ask that question anyways. If the president defies a court order on this thing and goes forward with that, do you think that's impeachable?
Oh, absolutely. That's my line from very early on has been around impeachment. You know, people have been asking me for a long time, when are you going to impeach? When are you going to impeach, et cetera? And the thing that I've been saying is that we have to go through this process, right? We have to go through the entire process of going through the evidence, making sure that people understand everything that's going on. But if he crosses a line of openly defying a court order and completely shunning our system of government, the three branches of government, then that's a pathway towards dictatorship. And that is a constitutional crisis by definition. And that's when I will have to call for impeachment. So, you know, it could be a court order related to the census. It could be a court order related to one of the subpoenas that we are, you know, fighting to get upheld. But ultimately, you know, we know that he has pushed on every single level for what a president is capable of doing, and this is when it goes too far.
Let's talk about the issue of LGBTQ rights. You are openly bisexual, married to a man, but openly bisexual, and have been very proud of that fact. We just had the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. We just had Pride Month. What did it mean for you personally to be a member of the House, to be able to talk about this on the floor this last month?
Well, it was really powerful to be able to be part of Congress, the Congress that finally passed the Equality Act. And of course, we did it on the House side. It's going to have to make it through the Senate. But
and what does that do for people that don't know?
The Equality Act actually just gives, you know, equal rights protections to members of the LGBT community. And it's basically as simple as that. It's massive civil rights protections extended to people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. And So to me, this is what I've found so powerful right now is the number of people who are young, who have been afraid to come out, who have said to me how much it means that I'm outspoken about it. Coming from a district like mine, where Prop 8, remember, passed in my district 10 years ago by 62-38. I mean, it was...
Right, and that's, of course, what outlawed gay marriage in California.
Right. And so to have my district turn around and for me to be able to run as openly bisexual and succeed in a district that has always been held by a Republican, a conservative, they feel like they can come out. They feel like that I'm being a voice for them, and I just think that that's some of the most moving feedback that I get.
Well, we want to have a little fun on this show. It's your first time you get to play this game. It's called Personal Issues. Okay. This is where we put 30 seconds on the clock and we get to know a little bit about you, okay?
Okay.
You ready? So here we go, 30 seconds on our clock. And favorite Disney movie?
Little Mermaid.
Favorite sports team?
Dodgers.
Favorite conservative? We'll pass. Favorite book?
Handmaid's Tale.
Best thing about being a Californian?
The sun.
Red or white wine?
It's summer, white. I like also rosé. Can I say rosé? Because that's pretty much my favorite.
Rosé all day. Favorite song?
Favorite song right now is Everybody by the Backstreet Boys.
The Backstreet Boys. Backstreet's back. Why is that? And our thanks to Katie Hill, and I love me some Backstreet Boys, too. Although I think I was more Team NSYNC. I don't know about you. Let me know. Let me know on social media. I want to hear which one you prefer. Let's get to our panel now. A lot to discuss with them. With us this week for the first time, Dean Shermay. He's a chef, former professional dancer. He used to be married to Leanne Rimes. People got to know him through that, but has become a big star in the fitness world, and also is politically active and engaged. So we invited him on the show to have his voice. And then back with us, Lisa Bloom, who so many people know, her mom, Gloria Allred's on all the time with us. She is a noted attorney, especially in the area of sexual assault. And Sean Steele is back, Republican National Committeeman from California. And we begin our discussion by talking about what's happening at the border. this very serious issue of this border detention camps, which you know, is very upsetting for a lot of people. It was our first look inside when we saw some of those photos. We've had these activists saying we need to shut down these camps. Sean, what do you think? Is it time to shut them down? Are you embarrassed by what you see?
I'm embarrassed that this is such a magnificent Orwellian doublespeak. For 2 years, Trump has been talking about the crisis at the border. For 2 years, the Democrats, all of them, Pelosi, Schuster, all the rest, would say, no, there's no crisis. There's no humanitarian problem. There's no great issue at the border. And then we have major leaders of the Border Guards, Department of Homeland Security, saying, no, there's a crisis. People are getting hurt. We're running out of facilities. We don't have Border Guards. We have to take care of these people. And then even then, when the billion-dollar package came in, passed by the Senate by 80 votes, Pelosi was still hesitant. The progressives are demanding wholesale open the border. Finally, she overcame the extremists in her own caucus and passed the Trump bill, which she promptly signed. Now we have, as of what, 10 days, billions of dollars to take care of these facilities. The entire crisis is completely phony because the Democrats discounted it for 2 years,
it's
saying there was
phony.
No crisis. And now it's a crisis.
Okay,
you can't explain that with a straight face.
I can't explain it because these camps are run by the Department of Homeland Security, which is accountable to the Trump administration. We're talking about soap for children. We're talking about toothbrushes and toothpaste. This is not a dollars and cents issue. It doesn't take billions of dollars. In fact, private donors have driven down there with their cars filled with these things for the children, and they're not allowed in. This is a crisis in moral leadership. This is a humanitarian crisis that the Trump administration, who is now accountable for these camps, has created and, frankly, refuses to fix.
And Dean, is it time to close these facilities down?
We can't close them. I think we're talking about two different crises. The original crisis from the Trump campaign was saying that they're coming to attack the border. The crisis is a humanitarian crisis. There's people that are at the border that it's our responsibility to, if we are going to process these people, we need to have them in humane conditions and process them accordingly. I don't know exactly what the solution is, but right now what's happening at the border is a complete disaster.
I mean, when you see those images, though, Sean, is they're not part of you as a human being, as
Alex,
feeling for these people?
It's absolutely true. There's 100,000 people coming in, crashing the border. They're being run by cartels. Children are being sold at the border. Corrupt governments are pushing them out of their country. There's more murders in Mexico than ever before. There's a disaster in Central America, and we're getting the butt end of that. And then you overwhelm the border when you have a porous border of 2,000 miles and they're coming in every direction, and you have a humanitarian duty to take care of it, and yet Trump has been asking for the money to try to protect the border, to provide the detention centers. Remember, the children in the cages and those pictures liberals are using and blaming Trump, those are Obama cages.
This is the
Don't disagree with the obvious truth.
No.
Obama put in the cages originally.
Those pictures came from the
Democrats are constantly changing the rules, and
there's a lot of yelling, but if I could actually get a word in here. You know, Trump wants to blame Obama. He wants to blame Nancy Pelosi.
If it's true.
Okay, he is in charge now. He is responsible for this. He is responsible for what's going on in the camps that are run by the Department of Homeland Security. And it is appalling. And you can talk about what's going on at the border. You can talk about the Democrats all you want. But why don't you talk about the fact that the government lawyers can't even defend this in front of the courts. And the courts have said that children are entitled to safe, humane treatment, and they are not getting it.
If you want me to, I'll be happy to talk about that. They were not permitted to even expand facilities or hire people because of the federal judges prohibiting from doing that.
There's another issue with government lawyers that was interesting this week, which is the issue of the census itself and the question of whether there should be a citizenship question on the census. At first, government lawyers said, we're not going to go forward with that question after the Supreme Court basically said you can't. And now they're saying, we want to go forward with that question. Is that question, Lisa, as an attorney, do you find that question itself, the citizenship question, to be constitutional?
It's absolutely not constitutional, and you don't have to take my word for it. The Supreme Court has said that. Multiple other courts have said that. That is clear, settled law. And so for Donald Trump to now say, well, we're just going to do it anyway, now we have a constitutional crisis that he's created because he doesn't want to follow what the Supreme Court has said.
Sean, I mean, where in the Constitution does it say that you have to be a citizen to be counted in the census?
First of all, we do what all good lawyers do. You read the decision, what Judge Roberts said. And he never said anything about it being unconstitutional. It was a process problem. I read the case. It's called Commerce versus New York. It's online. You can see it, read it. It's kind of short, nice, easy words. The point is, Justice Roberts pointed, we've been asking the citizenship question since 1820. Then we ask it again in a different form in 1950. We ask it every year.
We
Obama
have not asked since 1950.
That's not true. Please read the decision.
We have not
Don't
been
argue. You haven't
question.
Read it. I read it.
Since
now, I'll tell you more.
Look at it.
Yes, we have. And then we have what we call sample questions that we ask every year as part of the American National Survey.
Right. Obama's
been asking those questions for 8 years in a row. Jimmy Carter did. It's not a,
this is for one out of 30.
It's not constitutional. It's playing a role.
Let's get Dan in there. All that aside.
It's constitutional.
The president had his day in court. They did not make a strong enough case to get it passed. They lost. And then he sends out a tweet that says he's going to go against that. And he wants to say, well, it wasn't settled. You know what? If you're going to rule by your own words, no do-overs.
And here's why it matters. Here's why it matters. Because it's not just voting. It has to do with infrastructure.
Absolutely.
In Los Angeles, for example, we have a lot of immigrants, documented and undocumented. If we're going to have bridges and tunnels and public transportation, everybody needs to be counted. And, of course, people who are not documented are going to be scared away if that question is
asked. Yeah, I mean, Sean, Dean brings up that point, though, on the Mueller thing. The president says no do-overs. Why on this does he get a do-over?
Well, because Justice Roberts said, do it over. He literally said that, please read the decision. He says that the information given to us by Department of Commerce wasn't accurate, wasn't fully vetted. Do it over again, and that's what the lawyers are exploring right now. We're running out of time for that. It's not the biggest issue in the world, and I want everybody counted. But the bottom line is, here's another left-wing lie. It's going to scare people whether or not they're citizens or not. What kind of a country are we living in?
Every country that deports people all the time.
Every country. Let me help you guys out. Every country in the world, we're being more legal immigrants than all the other nations in the world combined. We don't know.
We've got a giant.
Obviously.
All right.
Secondly,
we've also got a giant, bigger country than most. But let's.
We're pretty generous, and by the way, this is a very
conservative Supreme Court with two appointees from Trump that made this.
We're gonna pause here because I don't think you guys are fired up enough.
As we take a brief pause in our conversation, we return by talking about the issue of what happens with the 2020 race. Kamala Harris springboarded this week. She went from being behind the pack, but because of what happened in the debate, the Quinnipiac poll shows that she's actually in a statistical dead heat with Vice President Joe Biden for first place in the Democratic primary. Let's talk about what happens next. More of our panel, Dean Shermay, Lisa Bloom, and Sean Steele.
Joe Biden was asked about sort of what happened in that debate when Kamala Harris attacked him on the issue of busing and race. Here's what he told Chris Cuomo on CNN.
Are you prepared for them to come after you?
I was prepared for them to come after me, but I wasn't prepared for the person coming at me the way she came at. She knew Bo. She knows me. But here's the deal. What I do know.
He's uncomfortable even talking about this. Yeah. What do you make of where the former vice president is? He comes into this debate, the big star, and now we see his poll numbers dropping.
Well, Senator Harris came in. She was polished. She was poised. And she looked presidential on that stage. And how did he not know that she was going to come at him on that issue? That's like the hot button topic that she could come at him with.
Yeah.
My thing is, now what? You've come at him. You've distinguished yourself from Joe. What's your policy? What are you going to do on day one as a president? Everyone always has this, I'm going to beat Trump, and this is what I'm going to do to beat Trump. It's like, okay, cool. Whoever beats Trump, what's your policy as a president? How are you going to govern?
I mean, look, she showed us all who would destroy Trump in a debate. She showed. She didn't have to say it. She showed us. And for Biden to say he was surprised that she came after his record, she doesn't know me. It's not about knowing you. It's about your record.
Yeah.
He looked tired. He looked like he, you know, thought this was just going to be a cakewalk. And, I team Kamala all the way.
Sean, you, on the show here, you have said often that you think that Biden is the strongest Democratic nominee, the one that you would be most concerned about as a Republican. Do you still feel that way?
I do, because he just made a statement this morning that he says it's got to be a center-left candidate to take on Trump. Kamala comes from an extreme progressive side of the party. She's a child of privileged parents. Both of them were PhDs. She went to the finest schools. She's a very smart person. She's a very articulate debater. But she's really with the super left wing of the party. That's not electable, no matter who you are, no matter how good the personality is. On the other hand, Sleepy Joe didn't look too good, I have to tell you. He should have been ready for that, should have been prepared. Everybody on the panel's correct here. Sleepy's going to have a lot of work. He's going to have to wake up and drink a lot more coffee.
I don't understand the Sleepy thing. What is that all about? Why is he sleepy?
He just looks like he's a little slow at the draw. And he's, you know, having, look, the admission, right, that he wasn't ready for the question, that he was surprised with it, that's sleepy.
He's not a great campaigner. I mean, look, he was elected senator from Delaware, a very small state, over and over and over again. He was appointed vice president, and I appreciate his service as vice president. But you have to really be a tough, fierce campaigner to win the Democratic nomination, which he's never been able to do before, and to beat Trump.
Especially
and I disagree.
Today.
I don't really care what happens on day one. We've got to beat Trump. That has to be the focus for Democrats.
So Sean says that Biden's the strongest nominee. Who do you think's the strongest nominee?
Oh, Kamala, definitely.
What about you?
I still, my head still says Biden.
Interesting.
Even though my heart says Kamala, I would.
All right.
Elizabeth Warren is fantastic, too.
And we'll see what happens. We've got a long campaign to go,
yes.
And who knows what happens when people start maybe attacking Senator Harris and her record, what will happen with that situation. This week we had this parade from President Trump as we celebrated July 4th. A lot of controversy. Some on the left thought it might not be a good use of taxpayer money. We had tanks in the streets of Washington, D.C. A lot of people were proud of it as a celebration of America. There was a rainy parade, but a lot of people still came out to support the president, support the country. Was this like much to do about nothing, this controversy over this, or is this something that people should be upset about?
Tanks, but no tanks, is what I say. That's what I've got to say. It's just ridiculous to prop up the military like that. If you're going to do something like Obama did. He had service members come to the White House for a barbecue on the lawn. That's the way you celebrate this country and the military, in my opinion.
Yeah, and why are we parading tanks around? For the millions of dollars it took to drag them out and put them through the streets of Washington,
diverted from the
we
parks,
could buy then. Some soap and toothbrushes for the kids in the detention centers.
I'm sure you enjoyed this.
I can't tell you how much I enjoy hearing this. This is why Trump's going to get reelected by huge numbers. Most Americans love parades. They love the military. You see from the left and the hard left, they don't like the military. They don't even
love the military.
They don't even like the country very much. But this, they're calling it a Trump parade. In fact, it was a huge attendance. People loved it. Here's the proof. It was on full time on CNN and full time on Fox. You get a whole bunch, you get large parts of America watching this and enjoying it, and then Trump's speech was probably the best he ever gave.
But this
now,
is
people
what
don't want to talk
do.
About that.
They have
but
their
continue
military.
To attack the military,
no,
continue
we're not
to alienate the American
I
middle
military
class.
Family.
Go for it.
Last word,
the 4th of July is about America, and he made it about Trump, and that was the problem
yes.
there. It should have been about the people and America.
And about military hardware, not the troops.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there for now. Our thanks to our panel. One more pause, and now we pick up our conversation by taking a look at our favorite memories of what makes us proud to be an American on this July 4th week.
Independence Day is one of my favorite holidays. We live in the most unique country and civilization in all of human history. Extremely grateful that I'm living here. My ancestors brought me here, that my wife and our children get to live here. She's from Korea. This is the great hope of the world. And we should be grateful for every moment about that and love our fellow citizens.
Lisa.
What I love is that this is a country where people can stand up for their rights against powerful companies and individuals and win. That's what I do every day as a civil rights lawyer. I want people to not get discouraged despite all the negative stuff in the news and realize that you can stand up against sexual harassment or discrimination and you can win. And people do it every day because in the courts, everyone is equal.
Dean.
To follow that is pretty big. But for me, it's all about family. It's about diversity. It's about inclusivity. And I want to think about all of America, not just my immediate family. I consider everyone in America my family. So keeping that attitude moving forward, hopefully we can all agree with that.
Yes.
And to me, the founders were so brilliant, but the most brilliant thing they did was the very First Amendment, because it is the foundation of everything
Absolutely.
Else. Freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom from religion, freedom of speech. It allows a show like this to happen and is the foundation of our democracy, and so we thank them for that. And that's all for The Issue Is this week. Our thanks to our panel, Dean Shermay, Lisa Bloom, and Sean Steele. Our thanks to Congresswoman Katie Hill for being with us, and our thanks to you for listening. We want to let you know that there's a special podcast this week with Dean Shermay. We encourage you to listen to that, where we sit down with him, get into his new fatherhood, get into what made him a chef, get into his marriage with Leanne Rimes, talk about his new relationship, talk about his background. It's really interesting, and I hope you'll enjoy it. I certainly enjoyed the conversation. Seems like a really amazing guy. We hope that you'll rate our podcast, that you'll share it and talk to people about it, and please give me feedback. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening to The Issue Is. We hope you watch on TV Fridays at 10:30 on Fox 11 and Saturdays at 6:30 a.m. on KTVU. Have a great one. Thanks.
so much.